Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Well, my guest today is going to be Bill Wolfson, and let's talk, before we start, Bill, and I'm really pleased you're here. Many of you know, I think most of you know, that Bill is, of course, one of the sports guys, but he's also an attorney here, handles lots of different things, especially debtor-creditor issues and bankruptcy issues, and that's why I wanted him on the program today. But before we do that, Bill, let's talk about the weather.
Go right
so
ahead, Pat.
If you had to guess, which is the day you should go down to your boat?
I'm going
to
go Sunday.
Well, let's see if that's a good idea. Tonight, it's mostly cloudy and then isolated thunderstorms. Tomorrow, tonight there then is about a 70% chance of rain. Saturday, showers likely and then patchy fog. Again, the showers are more likely in the morning. Patchy fog, of course, in the morning. And then there may be a high of about 82 degrees tomorrow, but the chance of precipitation is now about 60%. Very small rainfall amounts, only a tenth and a quarter of an inch, except if there are thunderstorms, which it'll be higher. Sunday night, lower chance of showers, but then by Sunday, should be mostly sunny and then slight chance of thunderstorms. So if you're going on Sunday, that's the day to go. By Sunday night, partly cloudy, and then into Monday, partly sunny. And Bill, I welcome you to the program. It's the law. One of the things that I thought we might talk about, but I want to let you tell me what you want to talk about, but there was that recent case, GMAC Mortgage LLC versus Tamlin Willoughby, and I don't know if that's something you want to talk about. Otherwise, why don't you start us off with what you think people out there really need to know? Because one of the things that I'm seeing, and I do not handle any of these kinds of matters, but I think sometimes people wait too long to talk to an attorney. So why is that, Bill?
Well, I think a lot of people are stuck in the rut of fear, denial. They can't pay their mortgage because they're not earning enough money. They're worried about legal fees and costs. And just like seeing your doctor when you have that funny lump somewhere, it's certainly better to deal with something while it's small and localized or not as expensive as it is. It's much more expensive to deal with it when things have gone on for years and years and without success, you've had a lot of frustration, perhaps dealing with a problem. We like people to come and see us sooner rather than later. One of the things that I've always said to people who want to become clients is the easiest thing in the world is to pick up the phone and ask a question and make an appointment. The hardest thing in the world is to get yourself to the point where you're willing to do that. We see dozens and dozens of people in a given month who have let things go too long. One of the problems that I often face is we had a gentleman call me 2 weeks after a foreclosure sale, or a month after a foreclosure sale, a husband and wife, lovely people, who lived in a neighborhood not far from the house where I grew up. In fact, I would ride my bike past their house every day in the summer to go to the swimming pool. And of course, they weren't living there then, but they had just received a motion about a year or two after the foreclosure sale had been held by the Hunterdon County Sheriff's Office, and the motion was to have them leave the house by November. Now, why the bank took so long to do that, only the bank knows.
Well, in fact,
inertia is a terrible thing.
And what's that process? I mean, I know that there's a process, but I think people don't understand what it means to have a sheriff's sale. Could you explain that?
Sure. A sheriff's sale is the culmination of the foreclosure process. Foreclosure is a lawsuit brought by a bank or any other mortgage holder for the purpose of taking your property away from you.
Let me ask you something.
You no longer own it.
What if somebody is just a judgment creditor? Does a homeowner have to be concerned if someone has a judgment against them? Not a mortgage, but just a judgment because they didn't pay a debt or some other reason.
Oh, yes. A judgment, once it is entered by the judge and docketed in Trenton, meaning it's filed with the county, with the Superior Court Clerk's judgment unit in Trenton, becomes a lien on all real estate that you own in the entire state of New Jersey. So what happens is a judgment can likewise be foreclosed. You can use it to foreclose on real property and sell the property to satisfy the judgment. You need special permission from a judge, and you have to satisfy some of the standards that we have in our statute that allows us. New Jersey has a very interesting history about protecting property from judgments, and there are a number of steps lawyers must take before they can foreclose a judgment.
So then I'm assuming that if someone has a fairly small judgment against them, is it true that the first time they're probably going to have to worry about it is when they sell the property or when they try to refinance?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that question. If somebody has a $200 judgment against you because you didn't pay Visa or your dentist or something like that, that's not something where you really have to worry about a sheriff's sale on a home, because the attorney for the creditor, the person who was owed the money and who holds the judgment, has to go through an awful lot of steps in order to have that happen. And it's much easier to send out something called an information subpoena, which basically asks you under oath, where's your money? Show me the money. Remember that great movie with Tom Cruise and Cuba Gooding? Show me the money. You need, and where do you work? So they can either get your bank levy on your bank account and seize money there, or get a wage garnishment from your salary so that you can pay the judgment that way. So getting, and our judges require, because the statute that the legislature's put on the books has required that the lawyers who want to sell real property first take those steps and come up unsuccessful. They've got to come up dry. I've had to do this for creditors right now. We had to go through an awful lot of steps for a client to get permission to try to sell a doctor's office building because he owes the client a lot of money, and the client's not a bank. The client is simply somebody who lent this guy some money many, many years ago. And after four unsuccessful bankruptcies, all of which got dismissed, here we are still with the judgment. And when we wrote a nice, polite letter saying, when are we going to get our client paid, basically we got no response. So we sent the information subpoena. We got no response. We went through the whole process of asking that this individual be held in contempt. We got no response. We also finally filed a motion, and the judge ordered this individual to provide a response, and it showed that he didn't have any assets, at least that he was telling about, other than a car and a house that was in his daughter's name, and a certain amount of money coming in from his medical practice, which wasn't, strangely enough, didn't seem like enough, considering his age and the fact that he was a pretty well-known doctor in another county. So we filed a motion for permission from a state court judge to have the sheriff in the appropriate county go out and post his office building for sale. Well, that woke him up. And all of a sudden, he had a lawyer, and all of a sudden, we began getting offers. But it took us a year just to get through this collection process. Unfortunately, it's now been paid down significantly, but when you have a client who was owed a couple of $100,000 and they've got a money judgment which we've managed to keep surviving through three or four bankruptcies, cases that have been filed, we're now at the point where between the interest and the legal fees, all of which get visited upon this person who owes the money, we're now getting paid. But we have to schedule, we have to schedule a sale at some point. And unfortunately, there's a first mortgage ahead of us. And the building spins off a lot of money. The rents are pretty good, but the rents have been promised to pay the mortgage lender who's ahead of us. So if we sell the building, we may have to literally bid in our judgment for our client. The client will own the building subject to the mortgage, and we're very happy to have a nice fully rented building with tenants, and eventually the mortgage will get paid off and the client will own the building. But right now the doctor's paying, and so that's a good thing. It's a complicated process. It is not for the faint of heart. And
no, I think this shows that you really, in a situation like that, whether in this case you'd be the doctor or the person who's owed the money or the landlord, if rents aren't getting paid, that the process is not as simple as some people think, and they really should consult a lawyer.
Well, it's always a good idea, and this is not a commercial for lawyers. You know, sometimes you need us and sometimes you don't.
But I think, and I'm sure you would agree with me, I get a lot of calls, and certainly lots of times I can give people some information, and they really don't need to use me as an attorney or use any attorney. But I think that you're right. There's some real reticence among people to just find out, or else what I see, at least in the matrimonial area, is they've talked to 10 people, and everybody's given them advice, and frankly, it's often, and most often, the wrong advice as far as their legal right. I just heard from this woman, in fact, earlier today. She said that, 90% of women in New Jersey get alimony. Well, however, in her case, her husband's retired and 73 years old. So the question would be, she may need alimony, but the real issue is going to be, does he have the ability to pay? Maybe yes, maybe no.
Well, that's always a problem. As Lincoln said, he who is his own lawyer has a fool for a client. The difficulty, though, is that there's so many misconceptions, and there are so many difficult twists and turns to things that it is always best to have people who do this for a living sort it out.
And I think that most lawyers, for example, me, I send people, potential clients, I don't take these cases. It's not my area of expertise. So I would have them call Bill, or if it's estate planning, somebody like John Manfreda, or real estate closing. I mean, I don't even do real estate closings. I have a situation now where my client would like me to handle the closing. I won't do it, and that's because my client will be better served by having an attorney who really knows real estate, and more specifically, a paralegal who works for that attorney who will get it all put together.
That's always good advice. We often think that when my paralegal and I and the people who help us with our website sit down once a year to discuss it, I always make the suggestion that maybe what we should do is take a humorous approach on our website and saying, hiring us for your divorce will be the second biggest mistake of your life. But for
first one is your marriage, right?
Right. But for bankruptcy, it's your business like problems, maybe we're the right people for you.
But Bill, since you're such a boater, that's kind of like what I've heard about people. Their second happiest day of their life is when they buy a boat, and the happiest day of their life is when they're able to sell it or get rid of it.
Well, actually, that's not true. Mm-hmm.
Only a true boater would say that.
The happiest day of your life is when you sell your existing boat and get a new, larger one that's better equipped. I often think that as a boater, where there are, which has its own complexities, of course, but it's not an easy hobby to learn, but it's an addicting hobby. And
I think
absorbing.
It's an addiction like other things, and we'll talk about our football addictions in the next program.
But
what else would you like to talk about? I know that there have been
There's some interesting case law that's been coming down over the last couple of weeks. You mentioned the case GMAC Mortgage versus Tammy Lynn Willoughby, and this is a very interesting decision by our Supreme Court. And let me give you a little preface to why it's very interesting to me.
Give some information as to, you know, why that is important in your practice.
Well, this is a case that begins to deviate from the well-trodden path of literally hundreds and hundreds of foreclosure cases that are filed. The homeowners file an answer. The answer is usually stricken or thrown out by the court because in a foreclosure, typically, it's very simple. Is there a mortgage? Was it recorded? Has the borrower defaulted in payments? And does the lender actually, who's the plaintiff, actually have ownership of the mortgage or a right to foreclose? So foreclosure is very simple, and because foreclosures take such a long time, our judges are not always receptive to arguments that relate to problems with the mortgage. And remember that when you foreclose, you're in what's called a court of equity, or a place where a judge tries to be as fair as possible, even though the law might not give specific direction as to how to be fair. So you have the problem of these cases go on for a long time. The homeowner has many chances under the New Jersey Fair Foreclosure Act to cure the default in the mortgage and to try to avoid losing a home. But eventually, there has to be finality, which has become the big focus of our appellate court and our chancery judges. One of the problems, though, is that we see this over and over again. We're just beginning to see one or two little cracks in that wall. And, a case that came down, Willoughby, decided by our New Jersey Supreme Court, particularly our Justice Albin, who I think has been sitting on our New Jersey Supreme Court for about 15 years. Pat, that sound about right to you?
Honestly, I don't remember, but I know it's been a long time. He's one of the seniors.
But the facts are interesting. The issue here is whether a loan modification agreement entered into through the court's residential mortgage foreclosure mediation program was a permanent or a provisional agreement. And the facts are simple. Ms. Willoughby signed a mortgage in February of 06. In June of 06, she wasn't able to pay the mortgage, so she defaulted. And a foreclosure complaint was filed by GMAC Mortgage, and they got a judgment and scheduled a foreclosure sale of the property in September of 09. She asked the court to stop the sale and let the parties participate in New Jersey's residential mortgage foreclosure mediation program. Now, this program was started by the court in response to the economic crisis that resulted from the collapse in the housing market. And the foreclosure mediation program is intended to provide a neutral place or forum where the parties could attempt to reach a mutually agreeable deal for restructuring a loan in return to avoid foreclosures and bring some finality to this dispute.
Well, now, I don't want to interrupt, but...
But you will anyway, right?
I will anyway, because I think it's important for people to know about the residential foreclosure mediation program. Do people, let's say the in this case, the homeowner wanted to participate in foreclosure mediation and that program, does the bank or the lender have to agree?
The answer to that is no. However, you can make them agree at least to participate. To what extent the participation will be meaningful and in good faith is a real open question, because at the end of the day, the court can't really force the lender to change its mortgage note and mortgage agreement unless there's some agreement or and they're willing to do so, or there's some really truly bad conduct in the way the mortgage was obtained. Maybe it was obtained dishonestly. Or something really, really oddball. And it's hard to come up with all the examples, but they're out there. But let's talk about Willoughby.
Yeah, let's talk about Willoughby. But in general, would you say that most lenders participate in the program in good faith?
I would think so, because remember that this is really... It's not a true mediation. It's basically a back-and-forth exchange of information. And at some point, the mortgage lender may decide that they can make an offer to change the mortgage in some way, shape, or form, or decide there's no way they can do that, and they close the mediation and just want to continue the foreclosure, in which case the next remedy for the homeowner might be to think about a Chapter 13 bankruptcy proceeding or a sale of the home or any of a number of other things.
Okay, so let's go back to Willoughby. What happened? They participated in the foreclosure mediation
program. Well, here's the interesting thing in Willoughby. In May of 2010, almost a year after it was scheduled, the sheriff's sale was scheduled but not held, they reached an agreement which was memorialized in a signed document called a Foreclosure Mediation Settlement Memorandum. And this is on the court's form. A GMAC's lawyer handwrote the terms of the agreement into the blank section of the memorandum, including that Willoughby was being offered a trial to permanent modification plan contingent on signed modification documents and an initial down payment. Per the terms of the agreement, Willoughby would pay $6,000 down by June 7, and monthly payments of $1,678.48 a month.
Okay, so the first question was...
I'm not done there.
First question is, did she comply with those first two terms?
I'll get to that.
Okay.
In the event all trial payments were made, GMAC agreed to, quote, make modification permanent. But if Willoughby missed any payments, it would continue with the foreclosure. The parties agreed that the agreement was final, binding, and enforceable, and the mediator filed a foreclosure mediation completion report, checking off that the agreement was a provisional settlement, no need to reschedule mediation, case not dismissed, and loan modification.
Did they say it was provisional or permanent?
Provisional settlement.
Okay, so that after the mediation program, there was a written agreement, but they checked off the box that it was a provisional agreement.
Right. A little bit of a contradiction in terms, right?
Right.
So here's what happens. Willoughby, wanting to fulfill her agreement and keep her house, makes a down payment of the $6,000, and she does it by the right time. And she then begins to make the monthly payments of $1,678.48 through June 1 of 2011. So she makes these payments from May of 2010 for 13 months all the way to June of 2011. So she thinks she's got a deal because GMAC has essentially accepted the payments, cashed the check, and she thinks she's going to live happily ever after. So listen to this. On June 7th, 2011, the loan agent at GMAC sends a new loan modification agreement with an different terms and increasing the monthly payment to $1,814.52 a month.
Okay, well, let's...
Another $150.
Okay, let's just... So right now, she has a provisional agreement, and there was no end date to that provisional agreement, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
All she knows is at some point she's going to get a permanent modification
right.
if she does what she's supposed to do.
And all of a sudden, out of the blue, she gets this new modification.
Right.
And was there any justification given for that?
None at all. But here's what she does, and she was smart. She didn't sign a new agreement. But she began making the increased payment of an extra $150 a month.
Well, was that important? What if she had just continued to make the payment that she made under the provisional agreement?
I think she might have still have been okay. Let's go a little further after she gets told about this higher payment. In May of 12, a year after she gets told about this higher payment, she gets two more modification agreements with slightly different terms, which she decides not to accept. Now, here's where it starts to get interesting. On August 20th of 2012, GMAC returns her monthly payment and advised that the loan will be referred to foreclosure because
now,
she failed to sign the May 2012 agreement.
Okay, but wait. Before you do, I think that people, let's slow down a little bit so people understand. She has, throughout this period of time, made the higher payment that they wanted.
Right.
And, correct.
And in the decision, Judge Alban points out, quote, Willoughby had made $58,790.69 in payments to GMAC Mortgage under the original May 2010 agreement.
But was the fact, the amount, I'm assuming, was not the issue. The fact is that she made every payment under the original agreement. Isn't that more important?
That's much more important. And, in fact, her facts are even better because her conduct was good conduct. Not only did she keep her word, but when the lender broke its word and asked for more money, she paid that payment.
Okay.
And
now,
which I don't think she had to do.
Was that additional payment under, if you know, and maybe you don't from the case, was that additional payment going to... towards principal or interest, or doesn't the case indicate?
I have no idea, and the case doesn't really teach us that. She then decides that she wants to enforce the original agreement. So she files a motion with the Chancery Court. We have one here in Somerville that covered Somerset and Warren, pardon me. But what happens with this is that despite the down payment and all of these other things, GMAC doesn't seem to be honoring this agreement.
Now,
so judge ordered, listen to what the judge does.
So up until then, she made the payments until GMAC refused them. Then she went to court and said, judge, enforce the agreement.
Yeah, judge, a deal's a deal.
Right.
The judge orders the parties back to mediation. And then GMAC offers her a, quote, provisional settlement agreement with new terms, including a $3,630 down payment
and
monthly payments of $805 a month.
Bill, let's not get down into the minutiae. What happened is the Chancery judge, who was faced with a motion. Send it back to mediation rather than deciding whether or not to enforce the provisional agreement.
Exactly.
And isn't that what became the problem? And before you answer that, let's go to a few of our commercials, and then we'll come back and take that up. But the fact is, she so far has done everything right, correct? Files a motion to enforce the agreement, and instead of enforcing it or saying they're not going to enforce it and give a reason, the Chancery judge just says, hey, go back to mediation. Right?
Right.
Okay. We'll be back shortly.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Kind of a disappointment.
Okay, we're back.
We're back.
And we're back and talking about
Let's talk some more foreclosure law, Pat.
Yes, and but this case really is significant. So anybody, hopefully nobody's facing foreclosure, but it shows the intricacies and the difficulty, even when somebody seems to be doing everything correctly.
That's right. Listen to this. The Chancery Court denies the motion to enforce the settlement Mrs. Willoughby thought she had reached. So she paid another down payment, and she said verbally she accepted GMAC's terms and started making the new payment of $1,805 a month, which was slightly less than the $1,814.52 a month that she had been sending in. And remember, that's now the third change in payments. These payments are moving up and down like a yo-yo. The court denied her motion to enforce the settlement, finding it was a provisional settlement as evidenced by Willoughby's submission to subsequent mediation sessions, which she thought she had to do. And to make it even worse, on November 4 of 2013, a year later, her home was sold to GMAC at the sheriff's sale for $100. She lost her home, despite doing everything she was supposed to do. Now, in an unpublished opinion, meaning it's not precedental, the appellate division, which is one level below our New Jersey Supreme Court, affirmed the Chancery Court's determination that the May 2010 agreement was unenforceable because she never signed a permanent agreement. They never achieved a meeting of the minds for an enforceable agreement. And then the New Jersey Supreme Court granted her petition for certification, which means that they decide they want to hear this case because it's important. What did Judge Altman find when he wrote this opinion? He said, Will it be satisfied all of the contingent terms of the May 2010 agreement, rendering the agreement permanent and binding? Despite being compelled to engage in subsequent mediations and negotiations in an effort to save her home, she did not voluntarily abandon the May 2010 agreement. Justice Albin, writing for our Supreme Court in a unanimous decision, said, "The Chancery Court should have granted her motion to enforce the agreement as a permanent loan modification." And his reasoning is good, I think. At its core, this is a contractual dispute, and like all such disputes, the language of the agreement usually governs. In determining the meaning of a contract, the court has to look with fresh eyes and give the contract a faithful and logical reading to the words chosen by the parties. The issue here also implicates the Residential Mortgage Foreclosure Mediation Program, and the program is designed to intend to lead everybody to mediated resolutions, not endless rounds of mediation or litigation, goals which can only be met if the Chancery Courts enforce mediation settlements. Now, the parties disputed whether this was a provisional or permanent loan mod. Under contract laws, a valid settlement agreement requires an offer and an acceptance and terms that are sufficiently definite so each party can, with some certainty, determine what they must do for the other side. Although the agreement that Mrs. Willoughby and GMAC signed is not entirely free from ambiguity, the terms were sufficiently definite and detailed that with reasonable certainty, the parties intended a permanent loan modification. The agreement stated it was, quote, "a trial to permanent modification plan contingent on signed documents and a down payment." It also said if she made all the trial payments, it would become permanent. She signed the documents, made the down payments, and made all the trial payments. The agreement had all of the elements, all of the requirements that we learn in law school of a permanent and binding agreement. And she was reasonable in her reliance on interpreting the agreement to save her home. And nothing in the agreement said that after 12 months, GMAC could unilaterally demand that she agree to a new loan mod agreement on different terms or compel her to accept continuing mediation. And although she continued to make payments and actually increased her payments because she was afraid GMAC would start the foreclosure action and she'd lose her house, she didn't sign any new loan mod agreements, looking ultimately to the court for protection, which she did not get. And there it is. That's terrible. When the Chancery judge did not enforce the agreement and return the case to mediation, the case went awry, according to Justice Albin. Although Willoughby was compelled to proceed with mediations and negotiations to save her home, she never voluntarily abandoned the May 10 agreement and didn't sign the documents necessary to have a new contract or a new deal superseding the first one she made. So, let's talk about the bottom line here. Judge Albin said that they entered into Mrs. Willoughby and GMAC had entered into a loan mod that was binding it because if she made all the payments, she'd get a permanent agreement. She carried out her part of the deal. Excuse me. The Chancery Court, the justice found, made a mistake. They should have granted her pro se motion, her motion made without a lawyer, to enforce the agreement as a permanent loan modification. The mediation completion report should provide a checkoff category. Pardon me, final settlement case not dismissed, in order to make it more clear that this was a final settlement contingent on the homeowner's completion of trial payments. And when in compliance with those terms, it would result in dismissal of the foreclosure action. Now, the house had been sold. GMAC bought it. GMAC may have put that house back on the market, sold it to some third party, which the Supreme Court did not know what had happened to that house. So the Supreme Court, through Justice Albin's decision, ordered another hearing. What is the purpose of that hearing? To enable the Chancery judge to fashion what was called a good remedy, a suitable and equitable remedy, to try to be fair. If the house was sold to somebody who was a bona fide purchaser, who paid good value for the house, then she wasn't entitled to enforce the agreement because as third party's rights had intervened. In the absence of that, she's entitled to money damages, if any, for breach of contract. In performing a calculation, the Chancery Court may consider all relevant facts, including the payments she made, the insurance proceeds GMAC received for damage caused to her house during Hurricane Sandy, and the time Willoughby spent in her home without making monthly payments. That's important for our audience to understand because not only do you not get a free house, but you don't get to live in a house for free.
Well, in fact, I was just reading a case where someone thought they were going to be, win because they went into bankruptcy. This is the Wells Fargo again. It wasn't approved for publication. But what happened here is the appellate division affirmed the denial of the motion to vacate and order a sheriff's sale to be scheduled. But in this case, the court said that the matter had been pending for 6 years, and the people living in the house, not only did they continue to reside in the property for 6 years, but they did so without maintaining mortgage payments or paying the property taxes. So in that case, the court basically said, even though they had filed bankruptcy and had been discharged under a Chapter 7, when they moved to vacate the judgment of foreclosure and dismiss that complaint, the Chancery judge denied the appellant's motion. Now, Bill, I know you do bankruptcy work, so what usually happens if someone is going into foreclosure? I think you say that there are some alternatives, including, I believe you mentioned Chapter 13 or even Chapter 7. Why would someone who's behind in their mortgage payments end up filing for bankruptcy?
Well, there are a lot of reasons, and the worst answer a lawyer can ever give to a client is, well, it depends. So, but unfortunately, that's the answer we have to give, and that's why we have to sit the client down and dig into the facts. It's just like the doctor can't examine you over the phone. Although technology is getting better and better every day, sometimes
actually they do. Some
they do
tests
that sometimes,
the
don't
phone,
they?
So
yeah, I guess I'm showing my age. I'm showing my age, Pat. But you need to listen to the heartbeat and the breathing, and maybe run a few tests. So that's why lawyers like to sit people down and ask them all kinds of nosy questions, so that they can try to figure out how to help them. But so the question was this: why file a bankruptcy if you're facing foreclosure? Well, first and foremost is the bankruptcy is going to impose something called the automatic stay. So that's at least 3 or 4 months of some breathing space while you and your lawyer and the, perhaps even the bank sit down and try to figure out how to fix the problem if you're facing a foreclosure. The automatic stay is a temporary injunction that prohibits the foreclosure case from proceeding in state court. And bankruptcy court, because it's federal law, is superior to state law in this respect. So the state court has to stop. It has no power to proceed.
But other than stopping or delaying the case, is there any other advantage to a homeowner in that circumstance to file bankruptcy?
Yes. Sometimes if there's equity in the house can be sold during a bankruptcy proceeding with the permission of a bankruptcy court, and some of the non-mortgage liens, such as judgments, can be removed. So there's always a possibility that you as a debtor in a bankruptcy case, if there's a mortgage and there's some equity in the house, but there are judgments, the judgments can be canceled. And if the house is sold, you get, and your spouse, if you're married and the house is in joint ownership, you would each get $23,975 of Fresh Start exemption money.
Well, let me ask you, and we're kind of getting a feel, but what happens if only one of the married couple, let's say husband files bankruptcy and wife doesn't, and then the house is sold? Are you saying that the wife in that circumstance would be limited to $23,000?
Well, the wife's interest isn't limited to that $23,000 because
she's
never filed a bankruptcy. That's correct. It may be limited for other reasons. There may not be enough equity to add up
but
to that much money.
But let's assume there is enough equity. If one of the people don't file, let's say all the debts are in the husband's name, he had business debts, it's all in his name, and he needs to file bankruptcy because he personally guaranteed those debts. So,
well, if a bankruptcy trustee sells the house in Chapter 7, the wife would get her half interest free and clear.
So, and could the trustee in that circumstance, because I get this question asked to me all the time, well, how can a bankruptcy trustee sell the house out from under me if I don't want to sell it?
That's an excellent question. The bankruptcy code actually provides that the trustee must first offer to sell your husband's interest in the house to you for an agreed upon sum of money. So you, in effect, have a right of first refusal. If you decide that you want to, you give a trustee some money, buy out the husband's interest, free and clear of your husband's interest and free and clear of his creditors, but possibly still subject to the mortgage if there was one. The second half of this question, though, is more
interesting. Now, in that case, and you may not know the answer because I know I don't, would the mortgage, in light of the fact that the wife is on the mortgage, had signed for the mortgage, would the mortgagee be able to call the mortgage, or would they have to enable the wife, even though both she and the husband are on the mortgage, would she be entitled to continue to make the mortgage payments?
The answer is she's entitled to continue to make the mortgage payments because even though every mortgage that I've ever seen has a clause saying, well, if the borrower or homeowner files a bankruptcy, it's a default and we get to foreclose, the bankruptcy code prohibits the enforcement of that language in the mortgage. That's why there's a lot of twists to the and turns to these stories. We call it an ipso facto clause. I don't really like using Latin words in courtrooms because I'm not a Roman. A wanderer maybe, but not a Roman. And I don't think they really help explain things to people. The other reason to file, getting back to your original question, Pat, to file a bankruptcy is because you can use the Chapter 13 to regulate how you can secure debt and pay pennies on the dollar or nothing. So we call that lien stripping or cramming down. And what happens is we can also do that with judgments, and we can make it so that you literally pay a very small amount of money to get rid of a huge amount of debt.
But if you have a big first mortgage, is there any advantage to filing a Chapter 13?
There absolutely is. The bigger the mortgage and the less the house is worth, the more you can get rid of junior mortgages.
Well, let's say that the only debt on the house is that first mortgage. But the house is underwater, but parties want to keep it. Is there a Chapter 13 going to help them at all?
Not really. It'll help them cure the mortgage, but they won't get a discount. They won't get to modify the mortgage downward because there's something called Bankruptcy Code Section 1322, which has anti-modification provisions. In those anti-modification provisions, Congress expressly prohibits changing the first mortgage. Additionally, even if there's $1 of equity protecting the second mortgage, case law that we have here in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware says if it's backed by even a dollar, then you can't lien strip off that second mortgage. But that's no reason not to sit with a lawyer and have the lawyer who is familiar with these laws go through the process with you, because you may end up saving a great deal of money and your home. And there's something to be said for that.
Well, I think there is. And right now we're going to play some spots of our sponsors, and then we'll be back to finish up.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, handyman extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterdon Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home sweet home.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
This is Chamber President Chris Phelan inviting you to the 29th Annual Business and Home Expo with our restaurant showcase. This wonderful event will happen on Thursday, November 9th at our new location, Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington, from 2 to 7 p.m. If you're a business or organization and would like to participate, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at hunterdonchamber.org.
Well, Bill, we're just about out of time, but I think it would be helpful for you to give us, I'll give your name. It's William Wolfson, Bill Wolfson, an attorney here in Flemington. And Bill, why don't you provide our listening audience with your phone number and then just give them the range of things that you do so that, you know, if someone had a certain problem, what is, you know, I know it's all financial, bankruptcy, creditor, debtors, but be a little more specific.
Oh, sure. My phone number is 908-782-9333. We've been doing this kind of work for almost 40 years now, which is a long time. And I actually managed to learn something during those 40 years. And what I've learned is this, that just about every problem can be solved. Whether it's a financial problem or a business problem or a personal problem, we do a lot of different things. We do bankruptcy work. We prevent people from losing homes and businesses. We help people when they are in business and unfortunately they've done business with, or they have a partner or a customer who's filed bankruptcy. Sometimes we can help them. And sometimes we have to tell them, you know, the solution is not something that you're going to like. Other times, when people form businesses with others, we help them with their business disputes when there's a falling out, a business divorce, if you will. Additionally, we help people who have complicated problems with buying or selling land and other types of real property.
And I'm assuming that you also help people who are buying businesses?
We do indeed.
Now, have you ever done any franchise work? Somebody interested?
Yes,
who's interested in purchasing a franchise?
Yes, I have. Mostly, strangely enough, are food franchises. I've often found that they're the most interesting of businesses because, well, while we all have to eat, I've often wondered just how good some of these franchises really are for people who want to put something good to eat in front of you for a certain amount of money. I'm more of a mom-and-pop type restaurant kind of guy, if you want to know the truth.
Rather than a franchise. Well, I think that's it. We're going to go to the news, and then we'll be back with the sports guys.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
He does something in Guam. It will be an event the likes of which nobody's seen before. What will happen in North Korea?
President Trump continuing his harsh rhetoric against Kim Jong-un of North Korea.
He's not going to go around threatening Guam, and he's not going to threaten the United States, and he's not going to threaten Japan, and he's not going to threaten South Korea.
The president said on Twitter earlier today, U.S. military forces are locked and loaded with response plans to North Korea. Emergency crews in New Hampshire responding to a mass casualty situation at Exeter Hospital. Fire officials say they're investigating reports of a carbon monoxide leak, at least 16 people being treated in the parking lot of the hospital. A large staging area has been set up with people on stretchers receiving treatment, dozens of ambulances and fire trucks on the scene. USA Radio News.
Napa know-how.
The Napa Legend Battery does legendary things, like starting your car when the heat index hits a buck 25, or making sure your AC stays running like a gazelle. And now, when you buy a Napa Legend Battery, you'll get a prepaid Visa card by mail worth $15. $15 back and a new battery? That's not just legendary. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Offer expires 8/31/17.
We alarm our houses, and we alarm our cars. But when it comes to your personal information, it can be tough to know when something isn't right. That's where Discover Card can help. Now, we'll send you an alert if we find your social security number on any one of thousands of risky websites. And this service is free for card members. Just sign up online. It's our way of looking out for you, not just your account. Learn more at discover.com/freealerts. Limitations apply.
Investigators looking at the hazing scandal at Penn State that involved the death of a fraternity pledge say key video is missing. Correspondent Chris Barnes files this report.
Investigators did recover a surveillance camera from the scene of 19-year-old Tim Piazza's death at the Beta Theta Pi House in February. The incident that led to his death happened on February 2nd. The detective says footage before the 6th of February has disappeared. The young man fell downstairs at the house after a night of binge drinking during a pledge ceremony, and frat members never called the police about his injuries for 12 hours. Over a dozen members of the frat are facing charges, including involuntary manslaughter. I'm Chris Barnes.
An Oregon woman suing a hospital for millions after she accidentally smothered her newborn baby. Monica Thompson said nurses at Portland Adventist Medical Center brought her newborn son to her so she could nurse him. But Thompson's $8.6 million suit says the baby was brought in the middle of the night when she was medicated. She fell asleep, and when she woke up, the baby was non-responsive. USA Radio News.
With free next-day delivery from Staples, you can run your business like a pro. You can guarantee the marketing department that they'll get their supplies tomorrow, and guarantee the accounting department that they'll be delivered free. With free next-day delivery, you'll have the ability to move deadlines up and adjust budgets down. Go to Staples.com and get the office essentials you need delivered next day for free. Staples. It's pro time. Orders over $49.99. Placed by 5 p.m. Excludes weekends and holidays. Eligible items only.
Wall Street may have dipped down because of the rhetoric between President Trump and North Korea, but one industry seeing an uptick. Here's Jason Campadonia.
The owner of Atlas Survival in the Los Angeles area says ever since Trump started talking and tweeting about North Korea, he can't keep up with the demand for his Bomb-NATO survival shelters. Most orders usually come online, but now people are driving to the Montebello facility to see what he's got in stock. He says he's out of what most people can afford, but there are luxury models that come with 500 square feet of living space and a price tag of around $100,000. I'm Jason Campadonia.
The Dallas Cowboys will start the regular season without running back Ezekiel Elliott. ESPN is reporting he will be suspended 6 games for violating the league's personal conduct policy. Elliott was caught up in allegations of domestic violence more than a year ago in Columbus, Ohio, but charges were not pursued due to conflicting information. Elliott expected to appeal the suspension. He rushed more than 1,600 yards and 15 touchdowns as a rookie last season. And investigators reportedly went to question President Trump's longtime personal secretary in the Russia probe. ABC News says Rona Graft is called a key point of contact in the Trump universe. She would likely be pressed about Donald Trump Jr.'s meeting with a Russian attorney last year, a meeting billed as a chance to get some dirt on Hillary Clinton. Trump Jr. later said the claims about Hillary Clinton were just a ploy to get him into the meeting, which mostly talked about Russian children adoption. You're listening to USA Radio News.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center.